my name is.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Joel. Very excited for this week's episode in particular.
It's a special episode focusing on the Australian soap girls that turned their hands at pop in the noughties.
But before we jump into that, how's your week been? Any busy. Highlights? Busy.
Busy.
Even at this time of the year.
Oh, honey. When you're the fast life of Joel Babington just gets busier.
I love the fast life of Joel Babington. That sounds like an MTV series.
A documentary television event.
Yeah. That culminates to the launch of One's debut single, perhaps. Co-written by Hilary Duff.
Oh, God, yeah. Someone get Hill on the phone. But no, well, speaking of Hilary, she said she's had talks with Disney Channel about rebooting Lizzie McGuire, kind of with the character where she would be now. Nothing signed, nothing green light, very, very early talks, but that could be extremely exciting.
But the fact that she's up for it?
Oh, Hill's up for it. She's,
has she always been up for it? Or has she been one of those people that's like, need a bit of distance?
She had the distance, and within the past 5-10 years, she's always embraced Lizzie when it's come up. But yeah, my week's been very good, very busy, just in the run-up to Christmas. Work isn't slowing down just yet for me, but I'm happy about that. And yeah, just non-stop boozing as well this time of year, isn't it?
I mean, I haven't gone out myself in like about 9 months, like properly gone out. And then I think in the last few weeks, we've gone out together.
Mm-hmm.
We went out to Push the Button.
Had the best night out ever.
Really was the best. Like genuinely, I'm not just saying this because you're in front of me, but like genuinely the best night out in ages. Like hearing Nadine Coyle, Nicola Roberts.
Hearsay, 18s.
Did I play Hearsay?
Yeah, do you not remember?
Also 18s. I remember you jumping on stage for that. That was just...
Yeah. Great night. So I can't believe it took me so long to get myself to Push the Button, but I look forward to the next lot.
Listen, it's that thing. It's south of the river and we're just not in the vicinity. You know, we just have to make that much of an effort to go down there. And it's a good hour. Isn't
oh,
it?
Honey,
to get from
it's
south
a good
to
hour.
I mean, unless you want to Uber it, like it's just, yeah. Well, my week's been quite interesting because my episode of First Dates aired.
Of course.
I'd completely forgotten about it because originally they would say, oh, you know, it might be out in the summer, and then it didn't happen. I thought, okay, they've definitely scrapped our date because it probably wasn't like, you know, sassy TV worthy material. And then I just got a call like a couple of weeks ago going, oh, by the way, you'll be in the ads from about Friday. So you might notice like friends getting in touch saying they've seen you. It's been really funny just to see my friends' reactions to it. And their friends' reaction to it, because they all, like, it seems like all my friends have just been getting messages from their friends going, oh, your mate's on TV, I swear it's him, it looks just like him. And it's just like, then people have to ask me, like, oh, are you on First Dates? Like,
oh yeah, I've been getting non-stop messages from my friends about it.
It's just like, but needless to say, it was a very fun experience. It was a very lovely date, and I felt like we got a good edit. Because in TV...
You got a great edit, yeah. It was really, really good watching. I mean, I think even probably when you asked me if you were going to do it, I might have even advised against it.
Did
really,
you?
Probably, but the thing, it's just because I work in TV, so we all work within this industry, so we're always dubious of everything, aren't we? But it just goes to show, never listen to me, because... What a wonderful experience it was, and what a lovely, sweet edit you got, and it was a great, fun episode.
It was lovely. I mean, you know, you got to follow your heart, and my heart is just trying to find me some love, and clearly I'd do anything for that, so...
And you know what? I actually thought about you doing that and doing so well, and it being a lovely edit, and it made me think, I need to stop playing it so safe all the time, or stop not doing things because of something. You know, it's like, fuck it, just do it.
Sometimes you just gotta have a bit of fun. I think at that time, what kind of made me want to do it was because I kind of thought, oh, maybe my time in the UK could be coming to an end because I'm, you know, on some work visa situation. And I thought, okay, well, before I leave, I have to try something. I have to give it a go. So that kind of put a bit of a timestamp on it, which is all very appropriate considering we're talking Australian... soap stars turned pop stars this week. It's not even a thing that happens these days. It was such a moment in time.
Such a moment in time. Happened in the 80s and 90s and noughties.
We're specifically talking about the two giants of soaps in Australia, Home and Away and Neighbours. Like, you just don't... First of all, the ratings and the viewership for those two soaps were massive in those decades.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to think, we didn't really have social media then.
Mm.
I guess it was just a great platform. These shows were so big. Neighbours was shown twice a day on BBC One.
Bloody hell.
It was shown at lunchtime and then it was shown in the, like, late afternoon, early evening. So it was a big deal. And I can't remember what channel Home and Away was on, but now they're both on Five, doing great on Five. But they were like powerhouse shows. I think everyone in the UK, when you grow up at one, you go through one point in your life where you watch Hollyoaks kind of religiously, especially as a teenager. But I also think there was a moment in time where everyone watched either Neighbours or Home and Away religiously. There was about a year and a half where I watched Neighbours every day. I was obsessed. And I would record it on VHS if I was going to miss it. That's how into it I was.
I mean, it's just part of the culture, isn't it? I'm a big Kylie fan.
No.
You've never noticed? Big Kylie fan. But even like, as I was getting to know her music, which was circa Did It Again. And, you know, I was always aware of, you know, the kind of narrative around her as the breakout star from Neighbours. So even in Malaysia, like watching her music videos, you know, I saw Neighbours being referenced, but I didn't quite know what it was.
Do you know what I used to do when I used to watch Neighbours every day? I used to sit and repeat every line of dialogue in the accent, because I was always trying to practice and hone in my Australian accent, because I think in my head I was like, I will be on Neighbours and then I will be a pop star.
But we are looking at a very specific capsule in time where it was just absolutely hot for one of these breakout female stars on the soaps to transition into a pop career. Like, it almost was expected. You know, they've seen Kylie do it before. She's the big poster girl for that. They've seen Jason Donovan do it, Natalie Imbruglia in the late 90s.
Yeah, Danny and Away.
Danny also from Home and Away. Yeah, let's not forget that.
And then you had a lot of other success stories. That is a very magical show, because regardless, it's had a lot of success stories. Guy Pearce.
Yes, Guy Pearce was on Neighbours.
And is it Carl McLaughlin or Craig McLaughlin?
Yeah.
He was of the Kylie and Jason era, I think. Yeah. Don't quote me on that. Obviously, Chris Hemsworth.
Was he on Home and Away?
Home and Away, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, and obviously the absolute Academy Award darling.
Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie.
Which one was she on?
She was on Neighbours.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, and then obviously these esteemed people that we're going to talk about in today's episode.
Yeah, which is, you know, what gets us really, really excited. Well, me in particular, because it was just like such a part of the kind of pop star hype machine that we had in Australia. Okay, so first of all, we're going to say we love Delta. We love Delta Goodrum.
Yeah, thank you, David. Disclaimer, Delta, maybe one day we'll cover it, because she does. There's so much Delta, it would need and should have its own episode. So please, there is no Delta shade. We had Delta stands in this house. Absolutely adored her Olivia Newton-John covers album this past year. So much back catalogue. We cannot include that in a special with a bunch of other girls. Something interesting I learnt from living with David, which shook me to my core, is that Delta had a song out before Born to Try, which was never released here in the UK. And maybe I was just living under a rock, but I had never heard it or seen, or I didn't even know about it until David brought it up one day. Well, it rocked my world. That's all I'm going to say. She had a debut single before Born to Try, which I would say is very Britney Spears meets Mandy Moore.
Oh my God, that's a perfect description for it, actually.
But the aesthetic, if you watch the music video, it's kind of those two, it's Britney and Mandy pushed together, I'd say. I Don't Care, absolute bop. And
please look it up, guys.
Please look it up. Maybe we'll put a little clip here. I can't believe it went to 64 in Australia, I believe. 64!
Maybe it was meant to be that it wasn't a success because we got Born to Try, you know, kind of forced her to kind of take a back seat, do other things, go on Neighbours.
Exactly. Delta, look forward to speaking about you in the near future. But yes, Royal Wedding attendee Holly Candy made a huge impact on Neighbours, where she played Flick Scully.
There she was, a 16-year-old Melbourne girl. She was cast in Neighbours, and it was just like, she was on the show for what, about
3 years, she said it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a long time, especially like if you're a teenager. That's like, that's a big chunk of your life. We were watching a video earlier today. She made a cameo in Human Nature's He Don't Love You,
which is an Australian boy band, but her cameo was in the UK edition of the music video.
I mean, maybe they were trying to... I don't think Human Nature did anything over here, but, you know, maybe by having a girl from Neighbours in their music video, that would help generate a bit of interest in the UK.
All it took was Billy in that Smash Hits promo for the spark to ignite of her pop career, so maybe this did the same.
Maybe it did.
And then 2 years later, it gets extremely interesting.
We get to the epicness of Kiss Kiss, Holly Valance's debut single in the year 2002 in April.
This song was and is huge. Like, culturally, here in the UK, this song was a mega hit.
This was a big moment in Australia. Like, it was a big moment in Australian music. You know, considering how much cynicism there is in Australian press towards pop music, you know, when Holly went from Neighbours, first single out the gate, straight at number one with Kiss Kiss, and that music video just on high rotation everywhere, like, it just absolutely shook everyone. And it just even made the critics go, okay, like, she did that. She really did that. You don't have to hide from the sun. Try and lose your mind if you're not. You know that we can have fun. Cause tonight you're gonna get mine. Don't play the games that you play. For me, like, the entry into Kiss Kiss was just hand in hand with the music video. It was just, it was a pop star experience, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. It was literally A Star Is Born, the music video. It's a shame it kind of gets, or at the time was kind of overshadowed by all the press of the nude shots.
Yeah, the so-called nude shots.
But it drew a lot of attention to it, so...
And I have no doubt that they knew exactly what they were doing. I mean, you know, the flashing light bulbs, you know, just covering the modesties, or so to speak. This made all the papers, like, not just in Australia, but over here in the UK as well, apparently. I mean, like, it was all the rage. Everyone was like, is she really naked?
Yeah.
I just remember, like, all the boys were, like, trying to...
Take
the music video, pause it, slow it down.
That marketing angle, or the PR spin, was also used a lot when Adam Rickett released I Breathe Again.
Was he naked in
that? He's naked in that sort of, like, telephone booth tunnel thing, glass thing. And the thing was, are you really naked in the video, though, Adam? He was like, no, I'm wearing boxers, but for some shots I had to take them off because they were getting in. So, yeah, I really was naked. So I was at home rewinding a whole video. And then he had to dress everyone alive and kicking. Look, boys, you can do all that. Obviously, none of that happened. But the video was my sexual awakening, I'll tell you that much.
But she really put in the work circa the promo for this. Like, it was such a good thing that she decided to leave Neighbours and fully commit to this, because she was everywhere. She was in Japan, she was over here doing Top of the Pops.
There's an excellent performance of Holly singing it at something called BBC Choice. And I don't know, it looked like it might have been Hyde Park or something of that level. And she delivers a great live vocal and the best Ariba I've heard in pop music.
Stop it. Just spontaneously bursting out with
Ariba!
It was like, okay.
Listen, David, when you're a performer, you've got to keep it fresh every now and then, or do little things that makes it fun for you and the rest of the dancers. So completely can relate and understand to that.
This single caught on fire. Like, it was number one in the UK, debuted at number one in Australia. It was a platinum selling single in Australia, the 10th best selling single of the year.
So obviously we do need to mention that the song itself was a remake of another song.
It was by a Turkish artist called Tarkan.
How we were saying with Mandy and In My Pocket, it's great that it was bringing a different vibe and a worldly music vibe, or a world music vibe, to the mainstream charts.
Yeah, I just think it was just a genius move. She had a very distinct world music flavour to it that sounded like nothing else on the radio, but still could fit.
And what I liked, which we'll get into, is that it still followed in further songs in the album as well.
So following Kiss Kiss comes the all-important second single. I mean, where do you go from a monumental global hit like Kiss Kiss? You know, she completely takes it in quite a different direction with Down Boy in September 2002. It's actually an extremely clever choice. Like, I love this track. It's dark, it's got a kind of moody electro vibe to it, but still really quite on brand for Holly. You know, it taps into that sort of sensuality that she had in the first single and her videos and everything.
If sexy was music, it would be Holly Valance's career. I didn't really get to enjoy this song until more recently, until maybe even living with you, and you've kind of referenced it a bit sometimes or posted it on socials. So I can really enjoy it now, but as an 11-year-old in 2002, it was a bit too mature for me.
I actually think this track is genius in its own way. It's written by Rob Davis, who had, you know, at this point been riding high off the success of Kylie's Fever album, which he co-wrote a lot of the tracks to. And it was produced by Nelly Hooper, who had just worked with No Doubt on their Rocksteady album.
It's funny you should say that. So she referenced No Doubt in one of the interviews we watched today. A Gwen Stefani kind of style trajectory would suit Holly, I think, vocally.
Absolutely. We need to talk about the Down Boy video, because it was just, I mean, this looks like a really, like half of it looks like a really expensive GQ shoot.
It really seems like a record label. She's top priority. There's huge budget going into these, great dancers, stunningly expensive looking music videos, A+ promo.
I can't really quite figure out what her deal is, but it looks like she had been developed by Engine Room Records for about 2 years or so before Kiss Kiss came out. And it sort of seemed like when they felt she was ready, they pitched her to the majors and Warner signed her. And that's when the big kind of publicity machine happened. I always got the impression that she was pleasantly surprised that people liked it and it is working. And then off the back of Kiss Kiss, like, even with Down Boy, like, let's not forget, this was a number three hit in Australia. She's already had number one hit with Kiss Kiss. Down Boy goes in at number three. In the UK, Down Boy goes in at number two. She's massive.
Do you know what one of my colleagues had the audacity to say to me? They said, can you really do an episode around Holly Valance? Is there enough content for that? And I said, yes, there bloody is. Thank you very much.
We're about to get into Footprints, Holly's debut album, which comes out a month after Down Boy. So it's the month of October 2002. Kiss Kiss almost is the big glitzy decoration, the front shop window, if you will. But you got to give people that come into the shop something to admire. Mm. So there are tracks like that sort of off the ilk of Kiss Kiss, but doesn't try to replicate that, you know, as in they have the same kind of, you know, world music, Middle Eastern influences, like Tuck Your Shirt In
definitely has that.
Which I think at one stage was considered to be a single, but maybe it was too similar to Kiss Kiss, so they abandoned it. Whoop also has a sort of similar vibe.
Yeah, this album is definitely a mixed bag. This is nothing but like a Stan Holly episode, but songs like City Ain't Big Enough, the sort of mid-tempo, felt a bit like I was listening to like a Flight of the Conchords song. It's from the comedy side, I love that stuff, but you don't want your serious pop album to sound like that. But hey ho, like a first album is going to be a mixed bag for a lot of people, and she was trying different stuff.
Footprints made number 14 in Australia, number 9 in the UK. It actually charted higher over here and is certified gold. And number 19 in Japan, where it was also certified gold, and it was one of the biggest international releases of the year.
Wow.
She's big in Japan.
How do we get this podcast to be big in Japan?
I don't know. Get Holly Valance on it?
Yeah.
So did Holly have 3 singles in 1 year of this album? Yes, she fucking did.
And so she should do. You know, I would want 3 singles off 1 album if it was a hit. I'd churn them out, mate.
And let's not forget, like, all before Christmas, like, literally, she started in April with her first single, and then before Christmas, she's had 3 singles and an album out. And she's not just promoting just in Australia. She's in Japan. She's in the UK. She's everywhere. So she is like, this is my time. Let me go get it and get it some more.
Global
phenomenon. So 3rd single in December 2002, Naughty Girl. It's like such a gentle William Orbit style, you know, it's obviously not William Orbit, but it does have that kind of pensive, atmospheric, noughties pop vibe to it.
But still saying,
I'm a naughty girl. It's just, it writes itself, doesn't it? The headlines.
Yeah, Holly Valance isn't confirmed. Holly Valance is a naughty girl. Oh, this was the Sound of the Underground Christmas number 1 year, 2002.
Was it?
Holly V, Girls Aloud. Oh so that Christmas number 1 had already a big lot in it. So you had, obviously, Sound of the Underground at number 1, Sacred Trust by One True Voice at number 2, Cheeky Girls were in at, like, number 3.
Jesus, Holly didn't stand a chance.
So do you know what? It makes a lot more sense now that it peaked at 16.
The single wasn't actually released in Australia until January, and it made number 3 over there.
She should have released it in January here. It would have been a top 3 hit.
I don't know, but I felt like maybe, you know, she was...
I thought she might get the Christmas number 1. Girls Aloud, Pop Stars the Rivals, don't know what this show is. Release my single, I'm a naughty girl.
So Joel, next comes, we're about to do quite a contrast. Next comes another of our Aussie soap star turned pop star darlings, Rebecca Cartwright.
Beck Cartwright, as she is professionally known as, was on Home and Away. And in 2003... she turned her hand to pop music. You know, there were probably labels or management or Home and Away thought, well, they're not stealing our thunder. Who wants to be a pop star on this show? Come on, Becky.
So, Beck Cartwright started on Home and Away in 1999. I can't believe this. She started in the 90s.
When Beck turned to pop music, she didn't leave Home and Away. So, there was a lot less all-in aspect.
when you think of Home and Away and you think of the soaps, you see Tamin Sersok and you see Beck Cartwright. These were the two girls that were the face of it. I never ever watched one episode of Home and Away, but I was aware of who these girls were. Like,
both of them were two big key
characters, and she was just everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And also, I think she was like dating and was engaged to one of the cast members of Home and Away, so she was absolute Australian Chris TV Hemsworth. Darling. No, not Chris Hemsworth. She was a regular on the TV supplements. You know, she was just that girl. You know, she was just girl next door.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Where Holly was the naughty girl, this is the sweet girl next door.
She was the sweet girl next door. Even though they were the same age, the products they turned out in terms of pop music were
extremely quite different.
Very different. So, 2002... 19-year-old Beck Cartwright signed a deal with East West Records under Warner Music to launch a pop album. Now, yeah, as we just said, Holly has had a phenomenal year that year. Absolutely everyone's looking at Beck like, can you top that? Literally, Delta Goodrum is about to relaunch. In fact, Born to Try comes out a week before Beck's debut single.
Oh, wow, what a contrast that is as well.
Very big contrast.
No, this is like young Celine Dion, young Barbara kind of thing.
Amen.
Yeah, so this whole album and concept and person was brand new to me in research for this episode. And it's a funny one. All Seats Taken. It is a very fun track. The lyrics are bogus, absolutely bogus, but that adds to the fun of it. It sounds like a Xenomania demo that we'd never get to hear. You know how, one of the great things I love about Xenomania is their lyrics don't always make sense, but they're just so good. This was the vibe this song was giving me a bit. Since listening to it over the past few days, this song has been stuck in my head. I like this. I like it. It's got, it's very 18s vibe.
I love that.
You know, that's the sound, you know.
The single made number 10 in Australia and is certified gold. It became the 16th biggest selling single by an Australian artist that year.
The music video is extremely reminiscent to Jessica Simpson's A Public Affair.
I remember seeing this on Video Hits.
She's the dream marketing for that. Blonde, sugary, sweet, girl next door, fun music.
I think if you had the Beck Cartwright album when it came out, perhaps, you know, this would have been a moment for you because, in fact, let's get into it because, yeah. I mean, she released one album with East West Records, self-titled Beck Cartwright. It came out the following year in June 2003. But in that, she had three singles all up. Before the album dropped, she had On the Borderline,
which is an on the Spotify album.
For me, this should have been the debut single. I mean, it was more current sounding. You know, she worked with British songwriter Matt Prime, who had worked with East 17 and Sophie Ellis Bextor.
A fun music video. I liked the whole magazines thing.
I love that we are seeing a more glamorous side to Beck in On the Borderline. You know, she's dirt bike riding.
How's that more glamorous?
But she had her hair extensions in, she had the fake tan on. It just looks more glamorous when she was like shaking her hair out of the helmet. You know, but unfortunately, at this time, people were just like, do you know what? I think the concept of Beck Cartwright, the pop star, we're not quite into. So the single only made number 29 in Australia, which isn't, I mean, we say number 29 is quite good, but number 29 in Australia is like people haven't heard of it. Little by little, can you say?
Uh, And then the last single she had was A Matter of Time.
You were very concerned about this music video.
I was
video.
Very concerned. So it's a little bit reminiscent of the Sugar Babes 2 Lost in You video in terms of at the airport. And I love kind of shots, either staging or music video shots or film shots using stairs. I do. I love stairs. You can do so much with stairs. Now, there's quite a lot of scenes with escalators. And it really, you know, troubled me because our lovely Beck takes a sit down on a moving escalator more than once. And that's very dangerous. Your shoelaces can get caught in them.
True.
If it's going up or down, your hands could get caught in them.
Oh, God, didn't even think about that.
It's very dangerous. Mm-mm. It's extremely dangerous. Your hands get caught in all of that. She rested at her naked elbow. Escalators are dangerous. And Beck, please don't sit down on one again. And
she was reclining on it. She was
relaxing on that moving escalator. What are the kids to think? That's why it only went to number 29. Parents were saying, my child is not watching this. actually, this didn't chart 29. Wherever it charted, 28 or...
26.
26.
What do you think of the overall album? Because this, in my opinion, like listening back with fresh ears in 2018 and having done our first episode on S Club Juniors, you know, I personally feel like this, vocally, Beck is serving something that's closer to the range of S Club Juniors. Even though she's 19 years old.
Yeah.
This does feel very young. Her vocals on this feel very girlish. And it's not a body of work that really says, hey, you know, I'm trying to express myself as an artist. It's more like, I have a huge teen fan base and this is the kind of music that they would probably buy.
Yeah, it's very Radio Disney friendly.
This album has its moments. Like, genuinely, you know, there's a track on there that's written by Sophie Ellis Bextor. It's called What's Got Into You.
Sophie, if produced for S Club Juniors.
So Beck Cartwright's album made number 21 in Australia.
I mean, we can't fault Beck. Not every singer's graced the same opportunities, unfortunately.
Mm.
Holly ran with the opportunity she had. I don't think those cards were laid out to Beck. But there's the trailer online, which is a lot of fun for Beck's album. It's your favourite Home and Away Girls debut album is out now. And for a limited time only, you can get a free personality poster.
I want to know what a personality poster is.
Me too. There's just these, like, someone must collect all these pop rarities of free things you would have got with some albums. So this personality poster, when Scooch originally released their album, you could get a lunchbox. You know, I still want that lunchbox if anyone's got it.
So before we move on to the other girls of our Aussie soap star to pop star episode, let's look at Holly Valance's second and unfortunately final studio album.
Thus far,
State of Mind. So it's the year 2003. So literally, it has been a year and a half since Kiss Kiss come out. Like, this is no time at all. She comes back with State of Mind, brand new single, new sound, new image, new producers that she's worked with. And I'm fucking standing. I mean, she's found her edge with this one. I remember, this is like It's loud, it's gritty, it's got that rock element to it, but it's like not like what all the other girls are doing with rock. You know, there's elements of 80s electro clash in this.
Yeah, it's very distinct. She's wearing a Ramones t-shirt in the music video. The whole album is incredibly, is so much more consistent than the first album.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a stronger body of work. The Danny Minogue feel is very strong. You can... did this come out pre or post Neon Nights?
Neon Nights came out March of that year. So Danny was already doing it. Danny had already come out with Neon Nights. Gwen Stefani would come out the following year in 2004 with Love Angel Music Baby. Kelly Osbourne would come out the year after that in 2005 with Sleeping in the Nothing. These albums all have very, very strong 80s music feels. I never really grew up with 80s music, so this was like really my entryway to a lot of these, you know, sounds and what they were doing with synths and big drums. And it was just very exciting for me as like a teenager experiencing music. But I completely agree with you. Like, this is a very cohesive body of work. Can we say the single was a bit ahead of its time?
Yeah, you can. We're watching the music video today, and it feels very Danny of that era. Also kind of reminiscent of Louise and Pandora's Kiss, which I think didn't come out till one or a few years after.
So the music video was directed by Jake Nava, who, incidentally, early in the year just did Beyoncé's Crazy in Love. He's a huge music video director. He has Holly in an underground nightclub. You know, she's got an edgier look. The Ramones ripped top that you just referenced, which Holly got slagged in the press for in Australia. I remember one Australian journalist going, oh, she's wearing a Ramones top in the music video. Can she even name a single Ramones song? Bitch, that don't matter.
She's wearing a Ramones t-shirt. Why is she not naked? We like her in the music videos where she's naked.
But it was just like she just couldn't catch a break. You know, people just weren't ready for this body of work.
Now, it's a real shame when you look at charts of this record, isn't it? Because it went to number 57 in Australia and number 60 here. It did chart number 12 in Japan with first week sales of over 21,000, which is great.
Certified gold in Japan. So, you know, thankfully she's got her fans there. But what are your favourites from the State of Mind album?
Roll Over, I think, was quite good.
Roll Over, big synths, big drums. Like, it just sounds like something, like, purely a blast from the past. I absolutely loved the album opener, Hypnotic. I mean, from the opening bars, it was just, like, dark, sensual, very sci-fi. It just completely set the tone for the album. And I wish that they did more dramatic stuff like that. But I understand that she wanted to play with a more rockier kind of tone. Desire, which was meant to be the second single off this album. Big chorus. Like, you could absolutely imagine that on the radio. But it just, unfortunately, like, they scrapped it in the last minute.
Aww.
Curious, which she performed on, what's that daytime TV show that we saw?
Des and Mel.
Des and Mel. This is a cult classic album, you know. I just think if you're a fan of noughties pop music and of the kind of pop stars that we talk about, and you haven't spent like a few minutes on the State of Mind album, it's essential.
Oh yeah. Sit yourself down one afternoon, bottle of wine, listen to Holly, put it on while you're working, bop along to it, give yourself a treat.
I don't think this is like a bottle of wine album. I think this is more like beer. This is a beer album.
Vodka tonic.
No, this is like cans of beer.
Oh yeah,
Merkin nightclub. Yeah, this is a Uber ride out to Camden. Cans of beer in the back. Hopefully the driver doesn't catch you. Kind of sit you.
Holly Candy performing at Roundhouse.
Yeah.
Now, before we leave talking about Holly, David and I watched the clip from Taken today, the 2008 film, which Holly has a small part in. Even in her small role, she serves it by playing a pop princess. And watching her do her vocal warm-up gives me life. She hits the notes. It's beautiful. And I need the spin-off, Taken 4. But no one's Taken. It's just that character doing a pop concert.
It's just She-Ra. By She-Ra.
Taken 4. She-Ra's International World Tour. And it's more just where She-Ra takens you on a journey. I've been taken with She-Ra. Taken 4. Give me more.
So, we've already covered the wonderful, short but brief career of our girl, Holly Valance, and her home and away, sort of not quite nemesis, but, you know, chart contemporary.
Contemporary.
Shall we say, Bette Cartwright. And then following from Holly's State of Mind album in November 2003, a year after, we would get another soap star to pop star transition from South African-born Australian singer and actress Tamin Sirsok off Home and Away. So Tamin joined Home and Away when she was 15 in 99. She stayed with the show for 4 years and then decided to leave to launch her pop career.
I always think it is a very bold move, and life, you only live once, so absolutely go for it. Mm. But it is a bold move when these girls leave for the pop career, not do double duty for a while. I think hats off, because I think I would maybe be in that situation, do double duty for a while and test the water with the music. If that goes well, see ya. If not, oh, did that little pop single, but I've got another 4 coming out.
But exactly. But, you know, which is kind of what Bette Cartwright did. You know, she was very smart to sort of test the waters. And then she ended up staying with Home and Away throughout. I mean, I don't think she was ever given any time off while she was even promoting her album or her record. Like, she was still slotting that in with her schedule. But with Tamin, you know, she turned 21. She had already been the darling of the show for such a long time. She sort of was ready for a change.
And good for her. I must say about Tamin, so she's 21 at the start of her pop career. And I know Tamin more from the Nickelodeon made-for-TV movie Spectacular, which was Nickelodeon's answer to High School Musical, and also the final series of Hannah Montana. And so she's playing young roles in these, or certainly younger than 21, and they're much years later. So she is, I was saying to you earlier today, she is an ageless girl, you know, because she doesn't look old for these roles. She looks perfectly aged for them. So whatever serum she's using or whatever she's on, Tamin, shoot us a little message, send us a DM, because I would love some of the youth drink you're drinking.
We need to know where her fountain of youth is tapped into.
So she debuted with her single Pointless Relationship, which is very Hilary Duff, So Yesterday-esque, especially with sort of the music video visuals. So do you remember this single being released in Australia?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was such a big deal because she was like, in my opinion, the face of Home and Away.
Wow.
And when she transitioned to pop, I was like, please let it be good. Please let it be good. And then Pointless Relationship comes out and I'm like, you know what? This is in a kind of post-Avril world. Like, this really works. And the music video was so, like, very American style, wasn't it? Like,
very.
Kind of LA girl vibe. So I was like, this girl is going to be absolutely big. Absolutely big. The single Pointless Relationship was written by Marion Raven of M2M. It was actually meant to be for her debut solo album, but it ended up going to Tamin, so
Tamin snatched it.
Pointless Relationship made number 5 in Australia and it's certified platinum.
It was going to be released in September 2005 in the UK, but got cancelled due to Tamin doing a film. So, which I'm not sure, it says which failed to materialise. So I don't know if that means the film or the single.
I mean, imagine if she was over here. I think you would have really gotten into her around this time, because this was the time you really tuned into pop music.
Oh, God, Hillary was my number one.
Mm.
This was peak me. Hillary, Ashley, I was obsessed. So, yeah, if there was a new pop rock girl, I probably would have really jumped on board. I have all the warm nostalgia with the other things, whereas this one, I'm not seeing it through those eyes. Mm.
You know, sometimes we come to these things late, or, you know, they come to us late, you know, in life. With Tamin, I think there was just so much range in her that she just really wanted to show her musicality. So she signed a deal with Sony Music. She went to Sweden to record the album.
Good girl.
Literally, some of the biggest names of the time were working on Tamin's album. We had John Shanks, who did Ashley Simpson's first album. We had Matthew Gerard, who was doing a lot of the pop rock stuff. Bratz Dolls, the soundtrack. You know,
they were bops. They were bops. The Bratz songs were bops.
There were bops on those Bratz soundtrack. Savan Kotecha, who, you know, was writing for Shane Ward at the time, and a bunch of other kind of, I think Westlife as well, or, you know, whoever it was, but eventually would go on to write for Ariana and work with Max Martin. Like, these are great names to be involved. And they were all on Tamin's debut album, which unfortunately isn't on Spotify.
Yeah, so yeah, Tamin's debut album, which is called Whatever Will Be, is not on Spotify UK, so I have not had a chance to jam this. And maybe I think that album would make or break for me. If I wasn't super feeling the singles, I'd probably be drawn in with the album and then I'd end up loving it. Or, for instance, So Yesterday I didn't love.
Oh. But
because I loved Hillary, So Yesterday drew me in.
So Yesterday was quite big in Australia, but again, like, just like you, I wasn't really checking for it.
I was checking for it. I still bought it. Both CD1 and CD2.
But then Come Clean was the single after, wasn't it?
And that's one of the greatest songs ever.
That blew me away. That was when I was like, okay, it's time to admit, I really quite like this. I have no shame about it. So Whatever Will Be, you mentioned, Tamin's debut solo album. The single of that title came out in March 2005, and it's a absolutely gorgeous, tender, very wintry ballad. And I think it really kind of showcases her range, you know. She's gone from this kind of giving you a radio-ready pop rock single to a piano-based, you know, lots of strings, very lush ballad.
Very moody European feel to it, I would say, as well.
And that music video was gorgeous, wasn't it? I mean, it was just her walking all this time in the back of my mind, just based on my memory of it. I thought it was, like, filmed in China or Beijing or something.
Mm.
But now I'm looking at it, I was like, I don't know. Do they have trams in China? I'm not really sure. Say, whatever will be, will be. Take the good.
So this song was covered by one of my faves, Vanessa Hudgens, from High School Musical fame for her debut album, V. And it was an album track. She didn't release it as a single.
Having heard both versions, I mean, it's identical. Have you heard Vanessa's version?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know the Vanessa's version. Yeah.
I was jamming that back in the day, of course. You know, You Miss Your Baby V.
But it's just like, I never really got into Vanessa Hudgens, a pop star, but I was given the album to review when I was an intern at the Herald Sun in Australia.
And you gave it a glowing 5 stars?
I gave it about 3 stars. I can't believe they let the intern do the reviews for these. I was just, like, quite flattered.
Oh, did you demand? Or did you just go in and put it down? I've written a review for the new Vanessa Hudgens CD.
No, it was just like, we had to pick from a pile, and I think he just wouldn't have reviewed that ever. Like, it just wasn't top of his list, but because I did it and the copy was there, it just made the paper, because it was just, oh well, you know, there you go, something's written.
Did you cut it out and keep it?
Yeah.
Good.
Also, today I discovered there was a third single from Tamin's album. It's called
It's a Beautiful Thing. Come on, David.
We have to laugh at that video.
It's fine. It's just the added things to it. There's all these added animations which cheapen it for me, or it's just not quite what I want.
So Tamin, again, is now back into, like, rock girl mode. You know, she's got the bangs, she's got the fucking leather cuffs or whatever it was girls was wearing at the time, if you're showing that you're a rocker.
It felt more Disney Channel than teen.
The album made number 13 in Australia.
Then this single, Beautiful Thing, went to number 30.
For a major record label deal, I think they were definitely hoping for more from Tamin, and unfortunately it didn't quite catch on. I don't know where we were at this point in time. Maybe it was an oversaturation. You know, the Veronicas have had huge success. Looking at the landscape of Australian pop, you know, Australian Idol, our first ever series of Australian Idol would have maybe started in 2003. So I think pop was in quite a vicarious place in our country at the time. Yeah. You know, we were getting flooded with lots of these acts. And bear in mind, Australian media has never been very favourable to pop music, you know. And when they see anything that remotely looks like it's manufactured or is trying to replicate like a big American act, they will fucking slag it and they will take it down. It was very hard because authenticity is such a big kind of dominating narrative in Australian music. Like, you have to appear authentic, which was part of the reason why Delta's first album really worked. She was seen playing the piano, composing her own songs. She was not trying to be a Britney or whatever. People bought into that and thought, okay.
And they still are.
They're still buying into it. Little do they know, I don't care. MP3 is out.
It's the truth. Imagine that. That's the flip of it. Someone that's just yearning to be the next Britney, but they're forced to do the beautiful ballads behind the piano that they have to write themselves.
Yeah, they're just dying to do a hair flip with some choreography and they're just there with a long lacy gown.
So this single by Tamin was released on 24th of July 2005. And even though that went to 30, there were still plans for her to then do the UK release in September. It wasn't maybe a you're done kind of thing. Maybe things just naturally parted ways as opposed to a see you, mate.
Yeah.
Following that, she went to LA and is doing extremely well. So she did the Nickelodeon movie, she did Hannah Montana, she did Pretty Little Liars. These are big gigs, you know.
And The Young and the Restless.
The Young and the Restless, from one soap to another.
Massive. So good on you, Tamin. She is serving it up and looking eternally 15. So following on from our girl Tamin's efforts with Sony BMG, I mean, it was a big record label product. Are we coming to a stage where maybe the Aussie soap star to pop star transition is becoming a little bit tired? You know, I mean, it's now 2005 rolling into 2006. Are the shows where they used to be? You know, are we a little bit tired of the formula? You know, have we... We've seen Delta go from strength to strength and then she's just sort of taken on a career of her own and Holly is not around anymore.
Well, she's doing film.
She's doing film. As in, she's not around in music. You know, so really, people haven't seen that kind of stick-with-it-ness from these pop stars, apart from Delta. But that might all change with the promise of one of our big standout stars from Neighbours, Stephanie McIntosh.
This is when I religiously watched Neighbours. And I was obsessed with Stephanie McIntosh. She was my favourite character. So when she started releasing music, it was great. 2006 is when her music came out. So that was when she started releasing in Australia. It took about a year for it to get here. So people were talking about it on Pop Justice and stuff like that. But Steph had a very interesting trajectory as well. She didn't leave Neighbours straight away, so she did a whole Test the Water thing. And she had the Steph Show, which was her answer to the Ashley Simpson show. It was a show that followed her recording this album. And back in the day, I was so obsessed with Steph, I found downloads to it. It was never aired over here, unfortunately. So I used to have on my iPod video, I had the whole series on it, which I used to watch. Unfortunately, only episode one you can find online now. You see her rehearsing for gigs, recording the album. Let's not fail to point out she's Jason Donovan's half-sister.
What?
Pop royalty only. She releases her debut single, Mistake.
It felt like the last big push of a soap star to pop star kind of effort, because she had a really big deal manager. She was managed by Glenn Wheatley, who essentially launched Delta Goodrum. And also, let's not forget, is the man behind John Farnham. And then, you know, off the back of that, you know, then she's got the, you know, multi-album deal with Universal Music Australia. So, you know, it was all kind of looking like it was pointing towards a really big launch. And as you say, the TV show, the Steph show as well, which was aired on Channel 10. It wasn't like a small whatever. Like, it was on the same network as Neighbours.
Big deal.
Probably after Neighbours, to be honest. Really big deal. It probably went on after Neighbours. And, you know, at the time, she was also in the press a lot for dating Nick Riewoldt. He was a star AFL player. 21-year-old Steph was, like, doing it.
Killing it.
Killing it.
Just have to say, this girl is stunning. She doesn't get enough credit for how bloody gorgeous she is. So she released Mistake, and I lived for this pop rock sound. And yeah, this song made a huge impact in Australia, went in at number 3 on the ARIA charts.
Certified gold.
I think Christina Aguilera may have been 1 or 2 with Candyman.
Oh, in the around ARIA this chart time, at that really? Time.
Wow. So I would happily be top 3 behind Christina. So yeah, a year later she did then come to promote it here in the UK. I think I was on like a Stephanie McIntosh fan board at the time, keeping up to date with everything. I was desperate for her to do a gig, but she kind of did like a UK club tour, performing regionally at places like Oceania and things like that. So unfortunately I couldn't go and see her live, but what I did manage to do was I got to go and watch her, have her interview at Loose Women. So I was sat in the audience for Loose Women, and it's hilarious. You see me, like, cuts the audience, and there's me right near the camera. I've got this long brown hair. There's me waving so much. Couldn't get a bigger wave to Stephanie. You can see how excited I am, and then I'm clapping, and you can just see how excited I am.
You're just living for
And her. I can vividly remember that day to this. It's funny how things just stay with you, because I can vividly remember that. I remember thinking, wow, this woman is stunning.
How did you manage, weren't you at school at the time? Or
so it was our GCSE year. So I think we were doing something called Art Week. I was like, nah, sod this. Steph's a Loose Women. So I dragged along my best friend Harry and one of our other friends from school, and we all went to see Steph do an interview on Loose Women. And yeah, absolute bop, great music video.
This was also shown on The Steph Show. The premise of the video was that she plays a, like, catering staff member rocking up to her shift at a really swanky house party. She gets a hard time in the video. She gets knocked down by some of these, like, partygoers. This guy, this gorgeous-looking guy, comes out to pick her out in the music video. It turns out it's the guy from Desperate Housewives.
He's the guy from Desperate Housewives, and he's also in the gay indie film Eating Out.
Mm-hmm. So it's Ryan Cairns, right, his name?
Yeah, and on the Steph Show, I remember she's like, thanks for coming through this, big Despies fan. Imagine getting that call, an Australian pop superstar wants you to come and be in her music video. Great, get me over there.
And then following that comes the Tightrope album in September 2006.
Now, I love this album. And I would have run out and bought my album straight away, but I actually won a copy from the Steph message board that I was on. They sort of did a competition and I won the copy. Now, I think it has a great Australian cover, but I am not keen on the UK cover at all. It's an extremely strange choice, I'd say.
So the Australian one sort of has like a dark blue background, am I right? Yeah, it's like a neon coloured.
It's from the aesthetic of the Tightrope music video.
Mm.
Whereas, yeah, the shot, for such a gorgeous girl, stunning girl, it's a strange photo they've picked.
Joel, I did message you earlier before recording this going, I can't believe you've never told me how good this album is, because I'm really, like, I was really getting into Tightrope very belatedly in the year 2018. It is an expensive pop rock album.
I was outraged when he said this to me, because I've stanned Steph so hard in the, how long have we lived together, 4 years?
Hasn't been four years, maybe three.
So in the 3 years we've lived together, I've always stanned Steph. Whenever I meet someone from Australia, I ask them if they're a big Stephanie McIntosh fan. And unfortunately, they normally look back at me blankly. But I'm like, who? You know, it's top three in the ARIA charts. Come on. But yeah, absolutely so many great tracks.
The type of people working on it, Tom Nichols, who's the main kind of producer guy that's powering this record and dictating the direction of it. He's worked with Lindsay Lohan, Rami Yacoub, who's worked with Britney and NSYNC, Guy Roche, who's worked with Christina Aguilera, Savan Kotecha again, Greg Kurstin, who would eventually go and work with Tegan and Sarah and Sia. Like, these are big people. These are talented people. It debuted and peaked at number 4 in Australia, certified gold.
That's incredible.
I mean, massive.
So, unfortunately here, it didn't do anything. But it did go to number 11 on the HMV pre-order charts. Also, forgot to say, Mistake tried at 47 here. God Only Knows is a great track. And it actually wasn't one of my standout ones originally. But even just from you today saying that, like even a few hours ago, I've realised how bloody good that song is. I mean, my favourites are the singles. I love the album as well. Mm. You Should Have Live is so dramatic and ridiculous, but it's great. You know, this sort of big power ballad about you should have lied about cheating on me. But it's like, would you really want them to lie? I don't know, but no. It's great. I think her cover of Wishing and Hoping is sweet.
Guys, I mean, this is like precisely the kind of stuff that would get you slagged in a press for, but I love that she went ahead and did a grinding electro rock rendition of Dusty Springfield's Wishing and Hoping. Like, who else would have the audacity?
Yeah, so you know how we have that when you don't know the songs are covers. Maybe there'll be kids in the next generation that will be like, love that Steph Mac song, and then they'll have their friend go, you know, that's a cover, right?
From the album, there came a second single, which is Tightrope, the title track of the album, which was only released as a single in Australia.
I think Mistake is a great song, but I definitely prefer Tightrope and So Do I Say Sorry first.
Tightrope was actually sonically quite different from the other tracks on the album, wasn't it? Because it had a more slinky electro take. It's almost like this album was different ends of Hilary Duff's career.
Yeah.
This is like Dignity era Hilary.
Yeah, it is. And it has a really good vocal on. I remember on the Steph show, she was worried because she had a live gig coming up and she was going to sing Tightrope. I think it was a corporate gig or something. And she was worried about hitting the, oh. So.
Which you hit effortlessly.
No, I did it lower. Come on. I did it lower. What the vocal coach told her to sing was, instead of doing the oh, she'll just sing, I'm walking a tightrope between who I love and what I know. So she doesn't have to pause and go into it. So it was an educational show for me as well.
Wow. That's like vocal lessons one-on-one.
And Tightrope is such a quite a moody song. And I used to love the lyric. My psychic said she sees disaster. I was used to sit there and be like, wow, shit's going to happen. Now, this music video is only available on iTunes, which is a real shame, or on Apple Music.
No one's uploaded it on YouTube.
No one. It used to be on YouTube.
So it's quite CGI heavy.
Yeah, and it's her in her bedroom, and then she's looking out the window. We've got these shots outside, and then she ends up kind of doing the tightrope, walking on the tightrope, and then the image of that ends up being on the back cover of the album. And it's such a fun, dramatic, moody song and music video.
She's had to do quite a bit of live work in promotion of this album. You know, she appeared on The Footy Show, and she was criticised for it.
She gave a live performance, and she had a problem with either playback or her earpiece. She couldn't really hear herself. And, you know, it just wasn't a perfect performance. It was a bit off, but I would be nervous. That was a huge crowd.
It was a huge crowd, huge TV, mains, like, you know, primetime TV slot.
But then if you look at any of our other rock girls that are our faves, Hillary would have been slated at every opportunity, and so would have Ashley. She got a lot of bad press.
Let's not forget the SNL thing. People jumped on that as soon as that went down. So I feel like, not to draw parallels because Ashley did lip sync on SNL, but Steph did sing live at The Footy Show. It just maybe didn't sound exactly like the recording or whatever.
I think it was bad of Team Steph to kind of
push her to that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you're on a major label. It's probably like prime time to promote your album. It's like week of release or whatever it was. And this is the biggest rating TV show. They should have just let her lip sync.
Or sing over the track.
Yeah.
So Tightrope was released in October 2006 and peaked at number 16 in Australia. And it came with a set of Habbo Hotel stickers.
What are these stickers?
So do you not remember the website Habbo Hotel?
No.
It was like you created a little animation of yourself and you went into this, like, it was like a whole sort of computer game thing. I used to go on it in year 7. Everyone used to go on it. And she went on Habbo Hotel to, like, she did like a Q&A on Habbo Hotel.
Are you
joking? Like, in character. That's how she promoted it.
That's brilliant.
And she said at that time that Steph's show was going to be aired in the US, I think. So there were all these potential plans that unfortunately never went through.
So following that, and actually I would agree with you, Joel, she would then come out with her best single.
So Do I Say Sorry First is my favourite out of every Steph song. So Do I Say Sorry First would feature on my covers album if I was making an album of covers. If that would feature on my coverage.
Joel Babington coverage. Millennials edition.
I remember, like, really trying to, like, think about these lyrics when it came out. So I'd be like, so do I say sorry first? Wow. So, okay. So you've had an argument and you know they're going to say sorry, but should you say sorry first? Wow. I just remember spending so much time thinking about absolutely nothing. And she did this big performance on the Australian MTV Music Awards for it. And again, unfortunately, it was a vocal didn't go as well as hoped. But it's a shame because it was still this. At the time, I had the video and I uploaded it on my Facebook because I just loved the performance, even if the vocal wasn't great. So it's just a shame that those two kind of big deal performances didn't go as well as they could have. But Steph recently posted, maybe last year, when Pink did a big acceptance speech, that after this performance, Steph was either upset or crying in her dressing room, and Pink knocked on the door to give her kind words about her performance.
Oh, bless her.
So this was technically Steph's second single here in the UK as well. So it was released as a download only single here. So when people, I remember when she was doing promo for Mistake, people say, did you write the song? She goes, no, but I wrote the next one.
Get that plug in, yes.
And, you know, it's a good answer. You know, I didn't write this one, but I did write my next single. It's the only song on the album that she wrote, which is a shame we were robbed of a second album, because it would be really interesting to see where that would go. So Do I Say Sorry first charted at 34 in Australia, and it charted somewhere between 200 and 300 in the UK on downloads alone. It had pretty much no promo whatsoever. And there's a scene on the Steph show where she's playing it to Jason, this song, So Do I Say Sorry first.
Jason Donovan appears on it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
On one episode.
Oh.
I even got this show, Steph, get me on it.
Is that your Australian accent? Your Australian dad accent. I love it. So just quickly, as we're rounding up, I mean, you mentioned before, So Do I Say Sorry first, as the definitive song for anyone wanting to check out any Steph McIntosh material. What would you say is the one for Holly Valance? Minus Kiss Kiss.
Of course, minus Kiss Kiss. I would say Down Boy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Someone's gotten into that.
Because I've gotten into it, yeah. It's because it took me so long, about 10 years.
Maybe more.
Maybe about 15 years. What would you say? State of mind?
I really just want to encourage everyone to just get into the cult classic that is the State of Mind album. Yeah, just dive that album into is that. Great.
And do you have a definitive Beck or Tamin song?
Oh, I do. I certainly do. I mean, I have to say, Beck Cartwright's All Seats Taken still gets played in 2018 for me.
Really?
Yeah, it's on my
Smash Hits Party playlist.
Yeah, but the edit version, which is like a little bit shorter, so I can actually download the tracks on my iPod.
Made the cut.
Yeah, well, no, because I have two different... I have my main Smash Hits Party playlist, which is like hundreds and hundreds of songs, which is a mood and an experience, but I can't download them all on my bloody iPod. So I make an edit version and All Seats Taken's in there.
Wow, get it. And Tamin?
Tamin's essential song is Whatever Will Be.
Really?
The ballad.
Well, my essential song out of all of these is It's a Matter of Time.
No way! No. This is a joke.
It no. is a
oh,
joke.
It's a joke. Oh. Joel, you got Beck excited for cheeky. A sec.
I know, I'm only joking. I'm only joking.
Got her excited.
But it's been a real blast to talk about these Aussie girls. There's something just very sweet about this soap star turned pop star career. And I think there's a reason why we get fascinated by it and we love delving into it. So it's been a real joy to shine a light on these four girls. Even if I've been a bit negative on some, I've really enjoyed the whole back catalogue and they've all really got great things to offer.
We're going to close with the Beck Cartwright song.
Oh my God. Please do follow us on all socials at WriteBackPod. You can shoot us an email at writebackpod@gmail.com. Please tell all your friends. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, give us a lovely little 5-star review. That would be gorgeous.
5.5 stars if they allow that.
They don't, but you can write that in your thing. Yeah. Put 5 and then put, I would put the extra 0.5 if I could.